This is the Mike Malloy Show, and this is Johnny Wendell. Mike is out tonight as he is enjoying the end of the Independence Day long weekend. He's lengthening it more than some, although there are a lot of people took today off or they took Thursday off, so it's a three-day weekend going into 4 days. Be here for 3 hours here on the Mike Malloy Show. Glad to speak to you again. Glad to hear from you again as well. If you are motivated and you wish to email me on anything that you hear that you want to debate or praise or rave with rage on, I'm easily reached at tbcwra@aol.com. tbcwra@aol.com. Easy to remember, the Boston Celtics will run amok. @AOL.com. Used to be the Boston Celtics will rise again. They rose. They won their 17th championship, so I had to change it. It's TBCWRA@AOL.com. The same, just with a slightly different meaning. It is pretty much a given between you and I that the American news media, the American mainstream news media, is a piece of crap, top to bottom. It is one of the most corrupt institutions in the country, period. There can be no denying. This is something that whatever its root cause is, whether it's consolidation, whether it's corporatization, whether the fact that news departments are now mixed up in commercial ventures much more than they used to be, whatever the root reason is, fact of the matter remains is that news in America is atrocious, and the mainstream news media stinks in America. We can't even debate this point. I would be shocked if you could find anybody who wasn't attached to a media company, regardless of their political point of view, that didn't regard the American news media as garbage, as terrible, as junk. Really, maybe one of members, Les Moonves, the guy that runs CBS, maybe one of his families, maybe Jack Welch, the guy that runs NBC, or did, one of his family members, whoever runs ABC now, maybe Rupert Murdoch at Fox, because Fox is one of the big four networks now, not the news, not the cable news channel, which in and of itself is ludicrous, but Fox itself is a major network. We know that the news networks stink in America, and the proof of the pudding of this, more radically than anywhere else, is a story that has been relegated entirely to the internet up until now. Now, I have not listened to anything else on Nova M today or on any other affiliate. I haven't listened to any talk radio at all today whatsoever. I've just been reading on the net prepping for tonight's show. But a remarkable story that first ran in Time magazine on its website is just finally starting to get play, and the fact that the mainstream news media has not hopped all over this, I haven't heard this in a single news blivet yet, to me says that we are hopelessly corrupt. Apparently, there is a comparison of the two political candidates, Obama and McCain, and they're talking about Obama and McCain and their gambling, their gaming habits. The short version of this is that John McCain is a high-stakes craps player who loves the rush of the game, and Barack Obama is a low-stakes dollar anti-poker player who sizes up the odds, rarely loses money. This came out in TimeMagazine.com, came out in Time.com. And apparently, they are talking about the way these two guys played cards and shot dice. Obama's not a dice shooter. McCain is. Kind of odd when you think about it, given the lengthy history of racial stereotypes in America. When you think of people shooting craps in an alley, you tend to think of people of color. Well, apparently it's reversed in this particular instance. According to Time.com, and I didn't even see this on Time.com, I saw it on a blog related to the New Republic, which is a mainstream, tilting, right, neocon website, generally. They're talking about McCain, and apparently he loves to gamble a lot. Now, this guy is running for president of the United States, and gambling is a serious peccadillo. We know that recently Charles Barkley, the former NBA great, Hall of Famer, and commentator on the TNT television cable network, that Charles Barkley was in serious, almost went to prison in Nevada. He owned a casino, $400,000 in unpaid debts. And he humiliated the hell out of him. And Charles was, you know, he was mortified. He paid. He didn't want to go to jail. The casino said, first we're going to sue you, then we're going to throw you in jail. He has been in trouble for gambling for years. Charles Barkley is estimated to have lost millions of dollars. Bill Bennett, the former Secretary of Education in the United States of America, Bill Bennett, ran up a gambling tab of $9 million a year. This guy who dominated the book charts in the 1990s with a book about the virtues of family values. Bill Bennett, Secretary of Education, the drug czar of America at one point. And it's still a moral scold on radio and television. And he's a gambling addict. Not to mention he's also a cigarette addict. He's also overweight and is alleged, although this has never been proven, to be fond of dominatrixes. So this is important stuff. Gambling is a sin. We go nuts over the idea of David Vitter and his prostitutes, Larry Craig and his wide stances, Bill Clinton and his mistress, Monica Lewinsky. That's sexual stuff, but we go nutty over it because it's sinful. It indicates a lack of character. It indicates a lack of self-discipline. So when the issue of a politician that gambles a lot comes up, you figure it'd be front page news everywhere. Well, you'd be wrong. I would wager, gamble, no pun intended, that this is probably the first you've heard of this. It's from me, isn't it? And yet, listen to this. In the past 10 years, Senator John McCain has shot craps on Mississippi riverboats, on Indian land, in Caribbean craps pits, and along the entire length of the Las Vegas Strip. 4 years ago, he joined a group of journalists at a magazine industry conference in Puerto Rico, offering betting strategy on request. Now, his former campaign strategist, Sonny John Weaver, says enjoying craps opens up a window on a central thread constant in his life, taking a chance, playing against the odds. His aides say he tends to play for a few thousand dollars at a time. He doesn't take markers or loans from the casinos, which he has helped regulate in Congress. He never plays on the house. The goal, according to his friends, is never financial. He loves the thrill of winning and the camaraderie of the craps table. In fact, it is said that on a recent trip to Vegas, check this out. On a recent trip to Vegas, apparently he cornered a woman who was from Rhode Island and was there on a convention and said, "You can be my good luck charm, honey. Stay with me." Now, a married man not supposed to talk to a woman in a bar that way. Has that made it into the mainstream media? Of course not. Of course not. But recently, because of McCain's problems with the religious right who hate his guts and don't trust him at all, his aides have told him, you got to stay away from this. Now, when the Nevada primaries came up, he announced on a visit to Vegas that he was going to the casino floor. His aides stopped him, and they feared a public relations disaster. And what did McCain do? He said, tell you what, let's have the casino take a craps table up to a private room, a high roller privilege he's indulged in before. His aides said no. And McCain laughs. He revels in it. He wants to get caught. A few thousand dollars at a time. That's what he does. A few thousand dollars at a time. This man could very well become president of the United States. And I want to tell you something, why this makes my blood run colder than cold as we speak. I am the son and the brother of two men that were and are addicted to gambling. I saw my father squander my college education money at the horse track. I saw my younger brother blow his inheritance and his kids' college money elsewhere, addicted to gambling. It is no different than heroin. It is no different than crystal methamphetamine. It's no different than any of this stuff. And yet, do you ever see it in the mainstream media? Question is this. What do you think? Does this or does this not absolutely disqualify this man from being taken seriously? McCain, a gaming addict with $100 million at his back from his wife. I would say that is a great disqualifier, if anything is. Call us. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Sing it, Kenny Rogers. Wendell from Alloy. We'll be right back.
You got to know when to hold up. Know when to fold up. Know when to walk away. And know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting. When the dealing.
This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in. Mike will be back tomorrow. We've been talking about this completely absent from the mainstream media story about Senator John McCain. Apparently he is a very avid gambler. Loves to spend lots of times in casinos, plays for a few thousand dollars at a time, has asked when he could have made a gigantic stir by being on the Vegas Strip recently, by being a gambling famous politician, asked that a craps table be moved into a private room for him. He has all the earmarks of a gambler that is addicted to gambling. Now look, I don't mind at all. If somebody gambles legal in Vegas, is legal in the Caribbean where he's done this. And realistically, if I didn't really care that much about Clinton and his mistress, which I didn't, or mistresses if there were more than one and I didn't, he should have never been impeached for this stuff. Why would I care about stuff that McCain is doing that is also legal? The problem is this. It goes to your judgment somewhat if you are willing to be seen doing this kind of thing on the one hand while sucking up to the religious right that abhors gambling on the other hand. This is more of McCain's flip-floppery of wanting it both ways, same as he's been on immigration, same as he's been on taxes, same as he was on Donald Rumsfeld, all of this stuff. It's wanting everything. But more importantly is that McCain could be breaking the law. And I will get to that in a moment, because apparently you and I have much to talk about, and it is your turn. We are at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. How do you feel about this revelation about Johnny Riverboat McCain? 989-1480, that is our number. Andrew in Philadelphia, you're on Johnny.
Hi, thanks for taking the call and enjoying the show.
Okay.
I suspect that it was the McCain campaign that leaked this story. There are a lot of young men out there in their 20s and 30s, guys I went to college with,
yeah,
who the only way they rebel in any meaningful way is when their girlfriend or wife isn't around, they go onto the computer and gamble.
So you're thinking, in a way, this is his way of competing with Obama for the youth vote? It sort of youngs him up. It makes him more of a regular guy?
Yeah, kind of the frat boy vote. You know, the guys who wear the collars up. And
in other words, he's the kind of guy you could have a beer with, like the guy we've had president the last 8 years, that sort of thing, the beer president.
Or the poker table president. These things are scripted. Nothing like this ever leaks on accident. You know that.
Well, I don't know. If he has been warned by his aides, Andrew, don't do this. No, do not bring a craps table anywhere. We don't want to have you throwing dice because it's going to end up on YouTube. I don't think so. Because you have to figure, he's in the Nevada primaries, right? A lot of Nevadans don't like gambling. Even it's the number one industry in that state. Religious right people that live in Nevada, they live in Utah, they live in Wyoming, in his own state of Arizona, they don't like this stuff. They think it's a moral failing, and it only reinforces what they don't like about him in the first place, which is you can't trust him. Rich in Huntington Beach on K-Talk. You're on with Johnny.
Hey, Johnny. Hey, man, I just wanted to say thanks for bringing this to our attention, because when you asked the question, if this was the first time that I've heard it, and it is. It actually is.
Are you stunned?
Obviously, the media is doing a hell of a job.
Well, they got to protect their boy, you know. I mean, McCain's base is the media.
Yeah, and it's just really scary. And you know what? And, you know, the other caller was talking about college kids and stuff like that. I mean, I go to college, and, you know, these guys, I mean, some of these people that I've gone with and I've met and stuff, they had gambling problems, and they were addicted. And they're not really someone that I would really want to have a beer with, because I've watched them get, you know, they've had to drop out of college, and they've, you know, basically screwed their lives up because of their gambling addictions. And,
sure.
and to say that our president, you know, our possibly president could be the leader of our nation and have these kind of addictions and these problems.
We don't want this.
Scary, no, absolutely not. It's scary.
No, and gambling addiction is not like is like anything else, Rich. There's a very famous story, Vegas-wise, as long as we're going to talk about Vegas, about a man by the name of Colonel Tom Parker. Music lovers know who Colonel Tom Parker was, Elvis's manager, from 1955 until Elvis died, 22 years later. And Parker made terrible negotiations with the International Hotel in Vegas to cover his gambling losses. Elvis was forced to work at low wages, a lot more than he wanted to, later in his life, because he had to pay off the colonel's debts. And why? Because Colonel Parker could never stop thinking about that roulette wheel. Now, how would you like it if John McCain, President of the United States, he is there in negotiations with Vladimir Putin, say, for example, from Russia, and they're talking about more mutual disarmament, the destruction of nukes, and all he's thinking about in the back of his head is, you know, I can't wait to get away from this crazy Rusky, because I can't wait to get out on the floor at Vegas and roll some craps. I can just see it now. Boxcars, baby. Daddy needs a new pair of shoes. Wifey needs more Botox. You don't want that. Boy, I'm telling you, I'm a little rusty on the McCain impersonation. But when we come back, McCain could be breaking the law in this. And this is going to shock you, because you know me. You know I got a libertarian bent. I'm a live and let live kind of guy. But not when it comes to breaking the law. And I'm going to explain this to you, and this may be what scuttles the SS McCain once and for all. Don't go anywhere. Wendell, in for Mike Malloy, 800-989-1480 on the Nova M Network. Don't go anywhere.
I said it, gonna set my soul.
I'm gonna set my soul on fire. It's Johnny Wendell and Mike Malloy.
A lot of money that's ready to burn. So get those stakes up
higher. Sing it, Elvis.
There's a thousand pretty women waiting out there.
Oh, yeah.
They're all living the devil may care.
That's right.
I am just a devil with love to spare.
Sing John McCain.
Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas.
Oh, Senator McCain, you sound good. All right, John. Johnny Wendell in for Malloy. Mike will be in tomorrow. Been talking about this McCain gambling story. Apparently, McCain is a high roller in Vegas. Likes to spend thousands of dollars at a time, rolling them dice, schooling them bones. Of course, if I was backed by $100 million, I wouldn't worry about urinating away thousands of dollars a pitch. And you may think to yourself, well, you know, Johnny, I've heard you many, many times on Nova M. I've heard you on K-Talk. I've heard you on a zillion radio stations. And you like to come across as someone who's live and let live. And laissez-faire kind of guy. Why are you standing in judgment of Arizona Senator John McCain? Why? While it is true that I don't care if somebody gambles within reason, and I don't care. Frankly, if we have a president that smoked weed, if weed were legal, fine. Drugs don't care. Didn't care when Clinton had his mistresses. But probably if I'd lived in the time of FDR, I wouldn't have cared about Missy LeHand, wouldn't have cared about Eisenhower's mistresses, Kennedy's mistresses, Marilyn Monroe, etc., et al., ad nauseum. Don't care about that stuff. However, I am a stickler for those who hide their peccadilloes and or are breaking the law. John McCain could very well be breaking the law. And how do I know this? Because I've been to Vegas, because I've been to Reno, because I've done a little gambling myself, not much. and maybe you have too. Now, what happens in a casino when you win a certain amount of money? You have to declare it, don't you? It is, after all, income, gambling winnings. Okay, and there is such a form from the IRS. If you're a gambling virgin, if nobody's popped your gaming cherry, the IRS has a form, W-2G. W-2 and G standing for gambling. John McCain has never filled out one of these forms ever, despite the fact that his aides say that he tends to play for a few thousand dollars at a time in Vegas. And this is how form W-2G works. The payer must furnish this form to you if you receive any gambling winnings subject to federal income tax withholding, withheld at the rate of 25% or 28% backup withholding. And this is on box 2 on the form 1040. And it's not just for people who win lots on money gambling, it's for people who lose as well. So even if he was losing at the tables, he'd have to fill out this form. But he never has. Now, isn't this peculiar? If Johnny Wendell goes gambling somewhere and makes a ton of money, I cannot dodge the IRS with this. I have to report it. If I lose a ton of money, I have to report that too. But he hasn't. Why has this not been in the mainstream news media? I have no idea. I'm not a mind reader of these people, sir, ma'am, whomever. I don't understand how they think. To me, this is absolutely as juicy as Jennifer Flowers. This is absolutely as juicy as Jennifer Fitzgerald. Ever heard of her? She was George H.W. Bush's mistress, outed by Linda Tripp, the same woman who outed Monica Lewinsky. Bet you rarely heard of her, too. Bet you never heard about the call boy ring they had when Bush was president back in the 1980s. 80s either. That happened too. The mainstream media has a funny way of looking the other way when the person they should be reporting on is a what? Republican. John McCain is beloved by the media anyway. He is also a Republican. I guarantee you that that is the reason why they will not say anything about his gambling and his non-filings of a W-2G. We are at 800-989-1480. You surprised by this? You shocked by this? You amazed by this? Or do you just figure it's business as usual with the SMSM, the sucky mainstream media? Don in Davis, California, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, how you doing?
Don, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, yeah,
good.
I grew up in Las Vegas, lived there about 25 years.
Okay.
I worked as a hotel manager at a couple of the casinos.
Right.
And people who live in Las Vegas, I moved there when I was in elementary school.
Right.
Say the gamblers are idiots. I just want to agree with you on that one.
I'm not saying he's an idiot, but you got to wonder something, Don. Let me ask you this.
Okay.
Gambling is not thought of as a healthy activity by all Americans. Would you say that is true?
I would say that's true.
Okay.
And of Las Vegas as well.
Okay. That being whatever. That's not relevant. The idea is all 50 states being what they are. You're running for president of the United States. The religious right, which frowns on gambling, doesn't like this. And yet, you can't get the craps table out of your head. Now, as somebody who grew up in Vegas, wouldn't you say that smacks of an unhealthy obsession? I'm glad we are in agreement on this. It shows that the guy doesn't have any common sense, and it also shows that Senator Kerry was correct when he asserted on Meet the Press this weekend, the guy has bad judgment. But you will never, ever hear this or see this anywhere in the stinking mainstream media. Now, will you? Now, I have less of a problem with McCain than I do with a lot of politicians. I will say this for him. He does flip-flop a lot on his issues, and he doesn't seem to understand that on YouTube and on Google now, you can check pretty much everything he says against what he said the day before. He doesn't understand. You can't get away with lying the way you used to. He seems to be a relatively honorable person in some ways. He's better than Romney was. Okay, I mean, whatever. But really, if you don't have enough self-control to cool it when you're running for president, that says a lot. Bill in L.A., you're on with Johnny.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on the whole gambling issue with McCain. Just wanted to clarify something.
Please.
You know, to declare winnings,
yeah,
you have to win over $10,000.
Okay.
At a specific table or a specific pit within 24 hours.
Now let me ask you something, Bill.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you something.
Yep.
This guy, according to his own aides, tends to play for a few thousand dollars at a time. Okay, that's $2,000 perhaps per pass at the craps table. You don't think that at any time in the last 10 years he hasn't exceeded $10,000? Like, what would he do? Go from table to table to dodge this?
I have no idea whether, you know, a few thousand dollars at a time is different than a few thousand dollars, say, at a hand. If he's playing a few thousand dollars at a hand, then...
Yeah, but we're not talking about a hand. Like, we're talking about craps. We're talking about dice. We're not talking about cards.
Craps and dice. All right. So the swings are pretty big in craps.
Yes.
A lot of craps players that I know that are playing with big money...
Right.
...will play until a certain point, and then remove themselves from play or switch tables.
Okay, so, because they don't want to make the $10,000 limit.
Right. It's a fairly standard gambling practice.
I guess, but it still doesn't pass the smell test with me, Bill. And I got to tell you why. If the issue of bad judgment is what it is, and you're talking about somebody who has the crap table on the brain, as this guy clearly does because of the way he acted earlier this year, what are the odds, no pun intended, that he would be obsessed with the idea of crossing $10,000? And if you're talking about someone who's been gambling a lot in the last 10 years, also somebody for whom taxes are not really an issue, Bill. This guy has more money than God. He's got 11 homes or however many he's got through his wife and her beer distributorship and her heiressness. I think this shows excruciatingly bad judgment. Maestro, do we have any more gambling music that you're going to play for me as a total shock? I can't tell. I seem to have been I seem to have been cut loose from my moorings here. We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Paul in Miami, Florida, you're on with Johnny.
Oh, yes. Hi. How are you?
Well, thank you. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, no, listen, I was just... had a comment. I just thought, well, you know, as addictions go, I mean, anyone that's addicted to gambling, it's a pretty serious thing, as you know, right?
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, could that carry over into his, you know, presidency if he became elected? You know,
absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, because there's no evidence anywhere that would suggest that just because you had the responsibility of the office that you're going to stop being the person that you were before. And that's what my main bone of contention is here. You know, I see him skirting tax laws or being clever about skirting tax laws. I see him as somebody who doesn't care if people see him doing something that will alienate people that he's sucking up to when he's outside of the casino. Obviously, he doesn't have much by way of judgment. There's my music. Leaving Las Vegas, Sheryl Crow. Too bad McCain never took Sheryl's advice, eh? We're at 800-989-1480. I'm Wendell. I'm in from Malloy. Don't go anywhere.
Yes, indeed.
Luck be a lady
tonight.
This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell in tonight.
To begin with.
Yes, indeed.
Be lady
tonight. Tonight, we're talking about John McCain's gambling problem. This ran in Time magazine this week. I didn't even see it in Time magazine. Where did I? I saw it on a blog attached to the New Republic, and apparently it is a big story in Sydney, Australia, on the Sydney Morning Herald. Thanks to Irish Dave, sent us a link to that story. They care more about this stuff in Australia than they do here. I mean, this is serious stuff, my friend. Somebody running for president of the United States who can't cool it at the gaming tables the year they're running, that would tend to indicate a strong obsession with same. This is not good. This is not good. Sean in Madison, Wisconsin, you're on with Johnny.
Grant.
Sean.
President of the United States who can't cool it at the gaming.
Sean. Oh, okay. Can you hear me now, son? Okay, no, okay. We're getting nothing but echo in this one. All right. Bobby in Scottsdale, Arizona. You're on with Johnny.
Johnny.
Bobby.
You saw it on a blog? It must be true.
Yeah, I did.
It's funny, man.
Yeah, I did see it on a blog.
This is really funny.
Okay, why?
You make me laugh, dude.
Okay, why?
Well, let's see. Ted Kennedy likes to drink. Clinton liked women. Bush was an alcoholic.
Okay.
Jack Kennedy had mob ties.
Yeah,
I
know.
Do you want me to go on? Are you out of your mind?
Let me ask you something. Ted Kennedy never became president of the United States.
Well, Clinton's. Women. Hold on. Bill Clinton liked women.
Really? How much they cost? How much they cost him? How much did they cost him, Bobby? Was he seeing prostitutes? No, he was having a consensual. He was having a consensual relationship. Okay.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cared. Okay, but I got to tell you something. When you, out of one side of your mouth, you say, I want the religious right to respect me, I am a deeply devout person. Out of the other side of your mouth, you gamble away in front of people like you don't care. Obviously, you have some kinds of issues, don't you think?
I don't know. I'm not a big fan. I live in Arizona, and I'm not a big fan of McCain. But, I mean, no one's going to run for office. I can dig up stuff on everybody. And, I mean, it's not a big issue, my friend.
Okay.
And you act like you've got some big, gigantic story that you just broke from a blog or New Zealand. Attaboy. You know why no one can, no, you don't read it? Because nobody cares.
Yeah, well, it was on Time.com, Time magazine, which has been in existence longer than you or I have, son. And yes, it does make a difference, because gambling is considered by many to be a sin. You know, you bring up Kennedy's drinking, you bring up Bush's alcoholism, you bring up it's blah, 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 blah. Okay, all of this stuff came out. It was made a big deal out of. How come this is not made a big deal out of? It is similarly important, but the media in America will not ever criticize John McCain. They love and adore him. Even if Michael Kinsley, a left-wing guy, come out and say journalists love the way he shoots from the shoulders. Okay? I saw that in Time. Time magazine. Big magazine, dude. Okay? Time magazine. You may have heard of it. You may have seen it on a newsstand. They're impressed. They love this kind of thing. But to me, all it says is you have somebody that is being protected by the news media who is, in effect, thumbing their nose at everybody else because he knows he's never going to be called on it. Steve in Front Royal, Virginia, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny. I just think that, you know, Cindy's got the drug problem or had one.
She's not running for president, though, so
yeah,
that's not that important.
I know.
Okay.
I get that point.
Yeah.
He's obviously got a gambling problem or whatever.
Yeah.
Rich Republicans seem to have these problems, and I know that Rush Limbaugh wasn't running for president, but, man, that guy's getting $500 million.
So, yeah, I know that, but on the other hand, he goes out and he earns his dough. John McCain married his.
I agree.
So what do you want to say about that?
I agree. And I guess what I want to say is I also want to make it clear bring up the fact that Barack is, you know, not going to play that kind of politics. I understand what you're saying about the media, and they're not going after McCain. It's pretty much, I think, because the media is controlled by those interests. I mean, even Sirius satellite radio.
But that being said, it goes deeper than being controlled. It goes to being a pet. It goes to the fact that McCain assiduously courts the news media, brings them up to his cabin in Sedona, Arizona, and feeds them barbecue and gives them beer. On the other hand, Obama today, his plane lands in St. Louis unexpectedly because they had engine trouble, and he lands in St. Louis, and there he is, right? And he says, well, we're going to have to stand here and give the press something to write about. You can tell that Obama has contempt for the media because he knows that the media is part of a joke. It's part of a show. Here's something I got to tell you this, and this is very, very important. We can talk about McCain's gambling forever. Whenever anybody tells you, well, the news media in America is hopelessly corrupted because it's liberal, it tilts to the left, it's left wing. Ask them, if this is the case, then how come, why is it was before the run-up to the Iraq War, 93% of the stories on the war that appeared in the mainstream media emanated from either the Pentagon, the State Department, or the White House? And where did I hear this? From Colin Powell himself. All right? He knew, and he admitted, 9 out of 10 stories came from us. And that's why I say when you see stuff in the mainstream media, you have to take it with a boulder of salt, a gigantic boulder of salt, because they do not have our best interests at heart or at mind. Frankly, as far as I'm concerned, John McCain can gamble to his heart's content. It doesn't make me know, never mind. But if he is not reporting his winnings, if they're over, if they exceed a certain limit, he's breaking the law. If he does this in defiance of his aides who say this is not a good idea, don't do this, it means he's got an obsession. If you got to be obsessed with anything as President of the United States, here's an idea for you. Be obsessed with the well-being of the people in the country. When we come back, the recession is hitting in very, very unusual and painful ways. You're going to want to hear this one. This one will tear at your heart. Wendell in from Malloy on the Nova M Network. We shall return. In for Mike Malloy.
I got a man that's more than 8 foot tall, 4 foot shoulders, and that ain't all. King size papa.
That would be me.
He's my king size papa.
I'm your king size papa.
I take the door off the hinges when my baby comes to call.
And baby is calling you. Johnny Wendell in. Seven past the hour here on the Mike Malloy Show. Mike be in tomorrow. Thanks so much to Irish Dave for sending us the piece in the Sydney Morning Herald. Appreciate it. Glad that you care. I'm easy to reach if you need to reach me. I'm at tbcwra@aol.com. tbcwra@aol.com. The Boston Celtics will run amok at aol.com. And they did. All night last night, my wife and I were woken up over and over again by the unusual baying of a dog, the unusual baying of an unfamiliar dog in our neighborhood. We know all the sounds of the dogs that we have. Our neighbor Michael across the way, he breeds pit bulls, and we know what they sound like. But this was an unusually mournful crying dog, piercing the night sky in Los Angeles, where we live. And this morning we woke up, walked down to the corner to see this poor shaggy shepherd mix chained with a thick junkyard dog-sized chain to a pole, chained, left there, abandoned, but chained and baying and miserable. And so we and one of the other neighbors, we got a bowl of water for the poor pooch, which seemed to placate it somewhat. But we couldn't understand what it was doing there until we were told by our neighbor Amanda that this has become epidemic in Los Angeles, and apparently, according to the Arizona Central paper, in Phoenix as well, and probably everywhere. The people that own the dog, Amanda theorized, because she didn't know who let the dog out, who chained it to this pole on the corner, were probably evicted or foreclosed on. And they had nowhere to leave the dog because shelters in Los Angeles are packed to the brim with what are called foreclosure pets. You know, it is it's excruciating to me to see this kind of thing, this poor animal. It is warm in the morning in L.A., chained up with no water. I regard that as inhumane in the extreme, and people that have a pet that would leave their pet this way, I regard that as awful. It is a sickness. But given the level of distress that is happening right now in America, in our economic situation, this really shouldn't come as that much of a surprise. And a lot of homeowners are left with one more difficult task, along with packing up and returning to the land of the rental. Or we even have a tent city here in Riverside County in Southern California being outright homeless or living in their car. But with the issue of pets, when they move to a rental, a lot of rentals won't take dogs and cats. They take the cats and the dogs to the shelters. But now they're full. And some just leave their pets behind, leaving them in the backyard or abandoning them on the side of the road, which is what happened to us this morning. They're called foreclosure pets. And according to the Arizona Humane Society, they've got more than 1,000 abandonment calls this year, double the number at this time last year. And in the Valley of the Sun, shelters and rescues have reported significant increases because of foreclosure. A woman by the name of April Hollis says, "People are heartbroken. They don't want to give up their animal. When you're struggling to feed your family, you have to make a choice. People come in crying." Foreclosures are up 14% in Arizona. They're up 30% in the Central Valley in California. And animal shelters are being deluged with these animals. Arizona, California, and Florida, the big three, are being inundated. And apparently, economic conditions have had such an effect on shelters that the Humane Society in our country has started a foreclosure fund specifically to help shelters cope with displaced animals. They're giving out grants from $500 to $2,000. And as you know, litter season has already happened and is about to end. May through July is when cats and dogs have their brood. And placement agencies for these animals are being absolutely overrun. I guess there's a group in Scottsdale, Arizona, a no-kill organization that tries to prevent the euthanasia of animals called Paw Placement. And these people are getting buried underneath phone calls and emails. Now, I don't want to go into the entire economic overview, which, by the way, you can get from me generally most of the time. I am a former securities broker myself in a younger, earlier part of my life. And I know a bad market when I see one. And I know that we are looking at job situations where we are hemorrhaging jobs. We have seen the worst stock market in June, this June, since the June of 1930. That's how bad it is in the financial markets. We have seen people that were gulled and conned into signing ridiculous mortgages. Yes, maybe they shouldn't have signed something they couldn't afford, but the people who made these mortgages out should have never given them to them in the first place. We are seeing people losing good-paying jobs that have been outsourced for years overseas, and now we're starting to see it hit home in ways that are excruciating. Because if you got kids, or if you don't have kids, actually, if you have kids, you know that your sons and your daughters, they regard your dog or your cat as a member of the family. If you don't have any children, you regard these pets as your children. And you have to decide, what am I going to do? I can't find an apartment. You know, landlords are in heaven right now with all these foreclosures. Rents are going up everywhere. And they don't have to take people that they don't want. And one of the provisos is, I don't want to take somebody who has pets. And because it is no longer an advantageous situation for the renter, it's an advantageous situation for the landlord, I call the shots. I don't want a cat. I don't want a dog. Next. And so you're seeing what are called foreclosure pets everywhere. Have you had to give up your pet because of this? I'm curious. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That is our number here. 800-989-1480. And if you haven't, or if you may be facing this, and you're a little bit trepidatious of the future, maybe it is time to start rethinking the whole idea of the ownership of animals as pets. Because as I was reading this thing, the only thing that kept crossing my mind, and I had dogs when I was a kid, and we had rabbits and stuff like that, typical suburban kid. I grew up in Wellesley, Massachusetts. We're going to talk about a rather funny story that happened in Wellesley later in the show. But I started thinking about this. We are mostly an urban and crowded suburban society now, aren't we? A fair amount of the American people live in tightly knit quarters one way or another, don't we? Isn't it somewhat inhumane to even have a domestic animal at this point? Because I see what is going on here. I saw with my own eyes this morning this poor animal chained up to a pole. And if not chained up to a pole, would have been freely roaming the streets of Los Angeles, would have been run over, could have been killed by a coyote, would have died starving. Do you think that maybe the idea of domesticated animals in an urban setting should disappear? Because with the economy going bad, we can no longer afford this luxury. How do you feel about the issue of foreclosure pets and the idea of maybe saying goodbye to the luxury of domesticating beasts in thickly populated areas? I think it's about time we said goodbye to this practice. I can't understand urban dwellers that own dogs. I can't understand the ones that own cats. This is no life for a pet. And if you are living precariously on the edge financially, and you may have to rent, and you got nowhere to go because you're attached to this animal, what's going to happen to you? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480, that is our number. I'm shocked when I saw this stuff. I'm shocked at what I saw this morning. There is no way on earth somebody cannot convince me at this point that we're not facing desperate times in our country right now. Because I know how close people are to their animals. But I think it may be time that we rethought the whole idea about the domestication of beasts in the first place. Because it is cruel to do what we are doing. My name is Wendell, Johnny Wendell. I'm at tbcwra@aol.com, tbcwra@aol.com. I'm also at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. You can email, you can call. One day I'll be allowing texts, because I'm a thoroughly modern man. Well, one thing I'm seeing in the modern world are changes that I just don't find that appetizing. And we're talking about these foreclosure pets. That ain't good. Wendell in from Malloy. Stay tuned. Mike Malloy. Apparently, Mike is not going to be in for the rest of the week. Sam Cedar will be in Tuesday through Friday. They never tell me anything! But I have been alerted that Mike will not be in. Sam will be in tomorrow. We have been talking about the issue of these foreclosure pets filling up shelters all over the United States of America, and it does raise a couple of serious issues here. Namely, the economy has got to be a little bit worse than official Washington is letting on. if people are abandoning their pets, and pets are like family members, then we actually may have the stink of a depression-like economy on us. This happened in the Depression, too. People just simply let their animals go in the Depression as well. It also says something about the idea that perhaps having domesticated animals in a mostly urban society is a bad idea, and perhaps city and crowded suburb dwellers should not have pets. Because if this is what's going to happen, they're just going to abandon them when you have hard times, and they are not part of the utilitarian nature of your life. You're not a hunter with a hunting dog. You don't have a guard dog. You don't have a cat that shags rodents, say. Shags them down, doesn't have sex with them, isn't the Austin Powers terminology. If they are not being used for something specific, perhaps we should rethink in our society the idea that the ideal family has a pet. Because apparently, it's not working out for a lot of them. And you might think, Johnny, that's terrible. How can you be against something as American as having a loving dog? Suppose you may have to give up that loving dog and have it be euthanized before it's time. Think about that. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Do you think it is time that we started looking more seriously about the idea of what happens to animals as our possessions when we can't afford them anymore? And maybe the idea of domestic pets should be in the ash bin of history. For however many thousands of years they've existed, they may have outlived their usefulness. Let animals be animals. I think so. We are at 800-989-1480. That is our number. Brad in St. Louis, Missouri, you're on with Johnny.
Hey, Johnny, this issue is a very big, grand issue.
Yeah.
And it also has a lot to do with just the economic status of America right now.
Right.
And it brings up the thought that pets are like kids. If you can't afford a pet, you shouldn't have one. Any pets that are adopted, there should be a financial status, a financial amount that someone is able to do before they're able to adopt a pet.
Yeah, in the ideal world, that's probably true, Brad. But I mean, the issue is the extenuation of circumstances. If I go to the Beverly Center in Los Angeles and I am cash friendly and I buy a pedigreed animal and it's obvious I can pay for the thing and my situation is good, that's great. 6 months down the road, if I lose everything, my wife loses everything, I'm going to have to do something about the animal. That's not fair to the animal either. And it would seem to me in times of economic unrest like that we have right now, that maybe we should rethink the idea of having pets, period. Because this isn't like an expensive piece of gear that you can sell on eBay. It's a living, breathing thing. Why is it that people treat their animals as if they are objects, not living beings? That's my bone to pick with these people. Gary, in Indiana, you are on with Johnny.
Hey, Johnny.
Gary.
Well, I tell you what. I think it was you who made the comment earlier about somebody that couldn't afford to be in an apartment or in a home and they euthanize a pet.
Right.
What if, you know, people got together and decided, well, we can't afford the four people in the inner city and decided to euthanize them?
Okay, but I knew you were going to go into the slippery slope argument, okay? But there is a fundamental difference between human beings and animals.
I don't think so.
I'm sorry, but I do, and I'll tell you why, Gary. It's one thing to love a pet very much. It's another thing, you love your cat, you love your dog. They are like a member of your family. You've heard that, Gary, right? But they aren't a member of your family in reality. They're not related to you by blood. They are a different species. You are dominant over them. Man is master at the top of the food chain. Other human beings are our equals and our peers. You can't regard animals as our equals ever, however much you may love them. When we return, let us talk some more about this. Is it time to rethink the entire idea of having a pet, especially in times of economic upheaval? I say absolutely. And as somebody who loves animals as much as I do, it pains me to think that people are just simply abandoning them like they're a tricycle with a busted wheel. Wendell in for Malloy. Hang in there.
That doggy in the window, the one with the waggly tail.
How much is that doggy in the window? His owner has skipped town, is in jail. I'm joking.
I must take a trip.
Wendell in for Mike Malloy here at half past the hour. How much is that doggy in the window? Is that Patty Page? Oh, my God. It's Doris Day. Doris Day, Patty Page, Rosemary Clooney, all these pre-rock and roll women singing. Can you imagine that? How much is a doggy in the window is a gigantic hit, what, 1952, 53? That's insane. Who would want to hear the song more than once, if that? Times people who tell me that, like, well, you know, things were better in the 50s and the good old days, blah, blah, blah. Ah, come on. How much is that doggy in the window was a number one hit song? Okay, they weren't better. Take my word for it. We're talking about the issue of these foreclosure pets filling shelters all over America. Essentially, people are losing their homes. They're being foreclosed on. They got to skip fast. They move to apartments. The landlords say you can't have a dog or a cat here. They lose their pets. They're going into shelters. Shelters are having to get grants from the Humane Society to deal with this. It is becoming an epidemic issue. But it really is only revealing something that those of us who lived in urban areas for a long time have known for a long time. Domesticated animals probably should not be pets in cities. And I'll say it again, they really shouldn't be. An animal should be free to go where he or she wishes to go and to serve a vital function, not to be somebody that is a substitute companionship-wise for someone that doesn't want to have children, say, or for a spinster or the male equivalent, a bachelor, because it's not fair to the animals. It's also not fair to those of us that do not have pets, as my wife and I can attest to. We are dealing right now with an enormous overbreeding crisis in our own home. One of our neighbors has decided to take it upon himself to feed all the feral cats in the neighborhood, and as a result, we are overrun with them and their poop. We have two small children. The idea of feral animals and their feces being around our small children is terrifying to my wife and I. But apparently our neighbors feel that they are entitled to have this kind of relationship with these animals. All of these feral animals were at one time either owned by somebody and let go, or their ancestors were. And as a result, what ends up happening is they end up getting diseases, transmitting diseases, or, as we found out most disgustingly a few weeks ago, getting killed by hawks and being decapitated. My wife came across the decapitated body of a feral cat in our backyard. Thank God my children didn't see this. They would have been scarred for life. And yet, this is what we deal with all the time. The people who live in cities seem to think that it's okay to have domestic animals. Yeah? What happens if you lose your home? You lose the animals get euthanized. Or you just plain let them go and they breed wildly? Then they are a nuisance, and they are picked up by the ASPCA or by whomever, and also euthanized. It is time we rethought our priorities when it comes to the idea of the domestication of animals. Perhaps it is a custom that should disappear. We are at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Barbara in L.A. on K-Talk, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, Tony. You know, I can speak from experience that people really don't look at all their options and are too quick to dump their animals. When I was growing up,
you think they panic, in other words?
They panic, because I can tell you two situations. When I was growing up as a teenager out in the San Gabriel Valley, we lost our house to foreclosure in the late 70s.
Okay.
And we moved into a ramshackle place, but there was no way my parents were ever going to give up our pets. It just wasn't an option. So there's places out there. I recently had to move from an area that was part of the subprime crisis I was renting.
Right.
And I looked and looked. I found a place on Craigslist. And
yep.
They took all my pets. You can do it. And I took a second job, and in August I'll be working three jobs to pay the higher rent. But I made a commitment to my pets, and I did what I had to do. And I think more people panic, and they don't think through all their options.
Well, that's noble on the one hand. On the other hand, Barbara, these are animals. They're not people. They come and go when you – are they dogs or cats?
They're both dogs and cats, but having said that, there's a human-animal bond, and animals bond to you as well.
I'm aware. I've owned dogs and I've owned cats. I know that stuff. I've come to this point in my life, Barbara, where I've come to realize that there's something kind of unfair about somebody living in a small apartment having a pet. When you go out for the day, I mean, you walk your dog, you lock them up, whatever, you don't take them to a kennel for a day, or you don't have a dog walker, and they're stuck there for the 8 hours at your work. Or in Barbara's case, she has three jobs. What kind of life is that for them? It's not like they can go on the internet. It's not like they can get, like, a bowl of chips. It's not like they can watch TV. It's not like they can text their doggy friends. They got to wait for you. That's no life. They're prisoners. In a lot of ways, I feel that pet owners have become excruciatingly selfish. And as shown by these foreclosure pets, I can't afford a house. Well, I'll just get rid of this thing as if it's not a living being, as if it's an object, as if it was a piece of furniture with a heart and a soul. I just don't get it. I don't understand this at all. Zach in Santa Monica, you're on with Johnny.
Hey, Johnny. Hey,
Zach.
Man, I'm in so much agreement with you. And I just want to rant for a moment to go along with you.
Okay, go ahead,
I live in Santa Monica, Beverly Hills, Pacific Palisades, Malibu.
Oh,
and
rich
I walk
boy.
Around.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I'm not rich.
Whatever. Go ahead. Go ahead.
But I see these chicks walking around with pink fingernail polish and pink lipstick and bleached blonde hair and pink dresses.
Yeah.
And they're walking around these little fashion accessories.
Yeah. And
it's
so you, in other words, the idea that the dog is part of the ensemble is offensive to you. I don't know. It all has to do really how well they treat the animal above and beyond everything else. But I got to tell you, when I see stuff like this, it makes me think to myself that we're cruel when it comes to animals. It's like, well, you know, I'm lonely and I need a pet. That's nice in a way, but does anybody ever think about the pet's feelings in this? Being cooped up in a tiny apartment, being cooped up in a tiny, tiny little yard. It speaks to our selfishness as a race, maybe, as Americans, as human beings. I'm not entirely sure. But all the same, the idea that you would develop some kind of bond and then, well, you know, I can't afford a place to live, I'll have them put to sleep. That's kind of freaky, don't you think? Periel in North Hollywood, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny.
Periel.
I appreciate you bringing this up, and I love listening to you.
Thank you.
I wanted to bring up a couple of things. You know, one of the things is that, you know, people do tend to treat dogs as like toys.
Right.
And that's where the problem comes in, because there's a difference when somebody treats an animal like family and when somebody treats them like a disposable toy. There are people who would, I personally would never, ever give up my dog.
But Periel, let me ask you something. How are you, say you are a pet dealer or you work in a shelter, how are you supposed to do an immediate psych screen of the average person? Like, I don't know how this person is going to treat a pet. I get a bad vibe from them, or make them fill out like a 10-page booklet or run a credit check on somebody. You can't really do that. Now, can you? It would seem to me that however close we are to animals, as the famous song by Sting goes, if you love somebody, set them free. Not set them free in an urban setting or leave them chained up to a pole like the poor dog we saw this morning. But maybe the old idea is say, well, maybe dogs and cats should return, the canine should become more lupine, canine being dog-like, lupine being wolf-like. Maybe return more to their wolf-like roots. Maybe have felines, the domesticated cat, become more like bobcats, lynxes, pumas, cougars. Why not? Because it seems to me that this is part and parcel of the American experience that is being exposed as corrupt. That people have no reservations about letting a living thing die. Maybe they shouldn't have them in the first place. I don't know. I mean, I can't think like a dog or a cat thinks. I will go along with you on that one. They bond to human beings. They feel like a part of a family. That's true. But they're not people. They're animals. Why can't we treat them like animals? Why can't we take them more seriously? We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That is our number. Mark in Phoenix, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny.
Mark.
I just to give you a little heads up, I listen to talk radio constantly.
Sorry.
yeah, I know. It's difficult. I feel depressed a lot. I go back and forth between Limbaugh and Hannity and then you guys.
Uh-huh.
Just to get both sides of the story. And I'm just trying to understand, because you made a point. You said, I can't believe, that people are putting these animals in these positions where they end up getting,
euthanized. Euthanized, disposed of, cast aside. You wouldn't do that to a human being. Well, they're living beings. Why are you treating them that way?
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't do that to a human being, but I'm just trying to understand, because it always seems that people who lean more to the left are so concerned with the welfare of animals and their life, and we need to treat them with respect. And,
right.
And, just for our personal pleasure to have an animal in our home, at its expense is not moral. But then at the same time, when it comes to something like partial birth abortion, where a child is born and is
wait. You are likening the idea of abandoning a pet somewhere because you can't afford it to a late term DNC. You're actually making that comparison, Mark?
Yeah, exactly.
No. First of all, late-term DNCs, 95 to 100% of the time, are going to result in a dead birth. They're also going to result in a mother hemorrhaging to death. Nobody wants to do those kinds of things. There are less than 500 of them a year. Please do not bring this stuff up. It is not the same thing. Please stay on topic. When we return, let's wrap this bad boy up. Wendell in for Malloy. We'll see you. Mike Malloy tonight. Sam Cedar will be in for Mike tomorrow. We've been talking about these foreclosure pets. They're filling shelters all over the country, from Boston to Detroit to Phoenix, Arizona to Los Angeles. People losing their homes. They're just letting their pets go or expecting shelters to take care of them. This is a very, very, very bad thing. Bad for the animals, bad for our cities, bad for our souls. And it does bring up something that I've wondered for a long, long, long time. Should city dwellers actually have pets? Isn't that in and of itself cruel to animals, especially if you are in a bind where suddenly you're going to have to get rid of them and have them euthanized or have them become feral and killed by the elements? Isn't the whole idea of being an urban dweller with a pet, in and of itself, a little selfish? I think it's starting to look that way. Sean in Endicott, Maryland, you're on with Johnny.
Hi. Well, I think city dwellers could have own cats because if they're house cats, you know, they can move around a house all day and not be bothered. But you know, I used to live in a well-to-do area, and I would see people in townhomes own these big dogs, and it's ridiculous. Because they think taking a pet out for 20 minutes a day and throwing a ball on a piece of grass that ain't more than an acre is taking care of them, and that's completely wrong.
No, it's not taking care of them, and it's not treating them like the kind of beings that they are. Would you like it if you were only taken out for a 20-minute walk at a time? I mean, in a maximum security prison, you get more free time than that. You get 23 hours of lockdown and an hour in a yard in a max, like Pelican Bay here in California. There are people that don't even walk their dogs for an hour a day. And yet, well, you know, I feed him and I take care of him. That's no life for the animal, especially now in a situation where you took out some mortgage you can't afford and you have a bunch of animals that you're going to have to just let go. And on top of everything else, when an animal becomes feral or an animal goes into a shelter, they become my responsibility. Well, I didn't want these things in the first place. That's not fair to me. And yet, that's the situation that we have now. What is so hard about reconsidering the idea of not domesticating animals anymore? Letting them be. Gypsy in Dallas, Texas, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny.
Gypsy.
Yeah, I've got a certain amount of agreement with what you're saying, but at the same time, it seems to me that what you're calling for is the extermination of our domesticated animals.
No, I'm calling for the liberation of your domesticated animals in areas where they can flourish. Why do people have pets? You live in Dallas, Texas. That's a major city, right?
I'm a truck driver.
Okay.
And I have three cats at home that my husband takes care of when I'm out on the road.
Wouldn't it be better if these animals actually could roam free and live free, not in an urban environment where they get run over, where they starve to death? Realistically, is that fair to the animal?
We have house cats. We live in a small town, but
yeah.
Even so, we have a large house.
Okay.
And we keep our cats indoors. We have always, even when we lived in a city, we kept our cats indoors. Cats spend 75% to 80% of their time sleeping. And they're quite happy having a nice big house to roam around in when they're not asleep.
I get that and I understand that, but by the same token, Gypsy, if you lose your place to live suddenly, your three pets, you go into an apartment and the landlord says, no, Gypsy's husband, I won't let him live here. You're going to have to make contingency plans for them. So this is something that, this is serious stuff. This has never come up before that I can, certainly not in my lifetime. I remember reading about this happening in the Great Depression, people losing their pets and stuff like that. But it is something to consider. They're beings, you know. You can't just let them go on the street. And if this is a possibility, why have them in the first place? That's all I'm saying. Emma, in Eureka, California, on KGOE, you're on with Johnny. Emma, where are you, Emma? Emma would appear to have disappeared. Marvin in Miami on Winds, you're on with Johnny.
Hey, Johnny. I find this topic very, very interesting. Coming from a third world country myself, I came from an island in the Caribbean.
Which one?
And I came here in 1997, and I found it very interesting. My greatest shocker when I arrived here, I will say to myself, is this is how people treat their pets. In the Caribbean, a pet is a watchdog. I mean, a pet stays outside. It roams around. It does what it wants to do.
Yeah.
Here, I see people having their pets inside their house locked up for 8 hours, and I'm like, how inhumane they can be in the United States. And I'm like, this is the land of everybody wants to come to, and this is how they treat their animals.
Well, yes, I mean, this is true. We do have a different take on this, Marvin. On the other hand, probably the island that you came from, where they eat roti, goat, and other animals that have been domesticated like that, maybe you get sick of your pet, you just roast them. After all, what greater honor can there be that they're with you for eternity in your belly? When we return, trouble in Wendell's hometown. Wendell in for Malloy tonight, but not tomorrow. Stay tuned. Johnny Wendell in for Mike Malloy. Sing it.
I got a man that's more than 8 foot tall, 4 foot shoulders, and that ain't all.
Oh, I'm your king-size papa. That's me.
He's my king-size papa.
At 6 past the hour.
I take the door off the hinges when my baby comes to call.
Oh, you can put that door back on the hinges anytime.
Such a lot of him.
Mm-hmm.
The way he grew, enough to last till 1992.
King-size papa. Yes, indeed.
He's my king-size papa.
I'll be in for Mike for another hour or so. He's Sam Cedar will be in for Mike tomorrow. Oh, man. When I was a little kid, or when I was a kid growing up in eastern Massachusetts, I was born in Boston, and when I was a kid, the address that you wanted when you were growing up in Massachusetts was to live in this town that we eventually moved to when I was 10 years old. It may have been the happiest day of my dad's life when he announced that he was taking my mom and my two brothers and I to Wellesley, Massachusetts. Wellesley, known colloquially as Swellesley, for a reason. If you, even back then, with housing prices considerably less than they are now, even with the horrific subprime disaster that has knocked real estate prices down to nothing, if you could get a home in Wellesley, you had made it. I'm sure there are suburbs in every major American city that are similar to this one. Westchester in New York, Bucks County in Philadelphia, Glendale in Phoenix. We live in Los Angeles now. There really is no such thing as the suburbs of Los Angeles. It's all one gigantic mess here. Marin County in San Francisco, Mercer Island in Seattle, Skokie or wherever, or Wilmette outside of Chicago. You knew that you made it when you lived in Wellesley. Wellesley was idyllic. Wellesley was Leave It to Beaver land. Wellesley was crime-free and clean and beautiful and bucolic. And when you had that address, you were okay. You had made it. You were like George and Wheezy moving on up to the east side, but you had moved on outside the western suburbs of Boston, and you were in Poshville. So much so, a friend of mine informs me today that one reason that we didn't get pinched when we were teenagers driving drunk is that the cops in the town over from ours in Natick, Massachusetts, saw that my license said Wellesley on it, and they did not want to deal with a powerful man who could afford an attorney to get his kid out of stir that was from Wellesley. Wellesley was a status symbol, and it still is. So I'm told. I've done a little research, apparently. Many members of the Boston Red Sox live in Wellesley. Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, Ray Allen of the Boston Celtics, they all live in Wellesley. These people make millions of dollars a year. And I was back there last year for my dad's funeral, and I actually spent a few hours in Wellesley. We didn't have the service there in the town, and it is more or less the way it was when I was growing up there. It's green and lush, has big colonial-style New England homes and wide streets and happy women running around in their white tennis outfits. Probably I went to school with some of these ladies. I don't know. But it is the kind of thing that is out of a sitcom or out of the movie that, Pleasantville. Yeah, a bit like that. And I was a little surprised to find that my former home was in the news big time recently in New England. Friends of mine back there are always sending me news stories and letting me know what's going on back there. I've lived in California for 19 years, and I'm Angeleno through and through pretty much, but I'm still fascinated by what goes on back in my hometown of Boston and in Wellesley specifically. Apparently, interesting new businesses are flourishing in this, the jewel of eastern Massachusetts, specifically whorehouses. According to the Boston Globe, there are brothels that have been operated in Wellesley, and there have been two of them have been busted in the last 7 months. I'm not going to go into too much detail. Suffice to say, they are of the massage parlor ilk, massage parlor plus happy ending, and you know what that means. And if you don't, I can't really say on the air. Suffice to say, a happy ending is one in which you climax at the hands of the masseuse, okay? And they had this kind of business in Wellesley, and the Wellesley cops busted it, and they were saying, this is amazing, this has never happened before. The selectmen of the town in Wellesley are up in arms. They are freaking out. How could this happen in our little town? Prostitution, a shimmy parlor, doxies. But they are in my hometown. I have to admit, a certain amount of pride and laughter at this, too, because they have worked so hard to cultivate this hoity-toity image. Of course, they spawned people like me, so what can I never fit in at all when I was growing up there. I was entirely rebellious from my adolescence until today, pretty much, and it didn't fit in with the idea of becoming a respectable citizen. So when stuff like this happens, it cracks me up. It also does remind me that when I was in high school in Wellesley, there was a drug epidemic. It was the 70s, and everybody was smoking weed and taking Quaaludes. Quaaludes were these kind of pills that you take and your legs would go out from under you. And what was funny about the Quaaludes is they would come in the morning and the ambulances would come in the afternoon at Wellesley Senior High School. But yet, this stuff would never, ever surface too much in my hometown because even back then, decorum was everything. They wanted to present the image that Wellesley was paradise, that it was Eden, it was Valhalla. And they couldn't have the fact that kids were ODing constantly all over the news. It was so bad that my senior high school was almost lost its accreditation during the Ford administration. They almost took the school away from the town. So there has always been a little bit of trouble in paradise. And if truth be told, there has always been prostitution in the suburbs of Boston. I used to be a courier for the Boston Phoenix magazine. Boston Phoenix is a weekly magazine in Boston, and I used to go and collect from escort services. They'd send me out on these calls because I was the edgiest person they had working there. Everybody else was kind of a yuppie-ish, nice, pleasant, you know, regular white boy type person, and I was this kind of scowling, skinny, tough-looking punk rock guy with black hair. So they figured that the madams and the people that ran the escort agencies would pony up the checks with a lot less resistance to me, so they'd send me out. And I got to tell you something, I made trips to Lexington, and I made trips to Weston. Weston is a suburb that abuts Wellesley, same thing. They had these kinds of places back in the 80s. It's been going on quite some time. But what is most fascinating about this story and about the cognitive dissonance that I feel when I think about my charming, little, beautiful, almost manger-like existence as a child as opposed to what it actually is it brings up a couple of things that I think are really, really important for us to think about as people in this day and age. Because in the last hour, we were talking about the issue of urban dwellers maybe should not have pets, that it's cruel to animals, and that we should start rethinking the way we live, in that cities and suburbs, the line between them isn't as thick as it used to be. And I was thinking as I was reading about this, and apparently, interestingly enough, this brothel in Wellesley, one of the escorts, the women, the masseuses, was an illegal that came from Korea illegally. And she had been working in another town in Massachusetts back and forth and had been beaten by her customers and told by her pimps, one of whom was Asian, one of whom was not, that she couldn't say anything to the police. That's rather exploitive and abusive. But it says to me that the line between the suburbs and the city is getting dulled in a way, and that because this was an internet-based business, it could happen anywhere. So I wanted to ask you something about this, and maybe broaden this a little bit, because I got to tell you, this story has been cracking me up all day. You have to understand how uptight and waspy and rigid this town is, and that the idea that there are paid escorts now outed in the Boston Globe, the biggest paper in New England, must be killing them. They must be thinking their land values are plummeting, and they can't believe this is happening in Swellesley, Massachusetts. Well, it is. What is the most bizarre thing you learned about your hometown when you grew up? What's the strangest thing that you discovered about the place that you have in your heart from your childhood? We're at 800-989-1480. I'm beaming from ear to ear thinking about the outrage that must be going through the cafes, pizza parlors, and yogatoriums of Wellesley as we speak. We're at 800-989-1480. What is the most bizarre thing you learned about your hometown? 800-989-1480. My name is Johnny Wendell. I can be reached at tbcwra@aol.com, tbcwra@aol.com, or here at 800-989-1480. I'm in for Mike Malloy tonight. Stay tuned. Wendell, 21 past the hour here, talking about my hometown. Apparently a prostitution ring has been busted in the hoity-toity town from which I hail, Wellesley, Massachusetts, and it's just, I wonder about something, and I wanted to ask you about this. Given that I came from a rather a pristine background, and of course I didn't turn out so good, but that's not the issue at hand here. Do you think because of the advent of the internet that there can no longer be considered a safe corner in the United States? That for all of the good that the internet does, it brings us closer, we get a lot more information that we would not be able to get ordinarily, that because of the existence of the internet, that you no longer have what could be considered crime-free parts of the United States of America. Think of it like this. At this point now, there's no way to get away from what people used to get away from. Remember that our grandparents and the like, they moved out of the cities into the suburbs. They wanted to get away from the teeming slums and crime, etc., et al., ad nauseum. But now, because of the internet, crime can follow you anywhere. Is it true that there is no safe corner in America anymore? Because it would seem to me that this is the issue at hand here, that anything can happen anywhere at this point. And perhaps, I don't know, maybe if it ends up destroying the line in between the cities and the suburbs, that's a good thing. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Do you think that the internet has shrunk our society to the point where there is no safe place in America anymore? We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Has the internet shrunk us down to the point where there is no escaping the reality that we were supposed to be sheltered from out in the suburbs our entire lives? I think so. I think this is an inevitability, and I've seen a couple of specials. One was on CNN, and I believe the other was on the Lifetime channel, the idea that the suburbs of America are the next great breeding ground for crime in America as well, that a lot of people who are losing their jobs are being foreclosed upon. They are turning to the drug dealing, they're getting into prostitution, they're getting into gambling, and stuff that they wouldn't have done ordinarily, crimes that normally were associated with the inner city. Is this the negative flip side of having an internet, that there is no bifurcation between city and suburbs anymore? All I know is if I'd grown up in the suburbs where I'd been more familiar with how life had worked in the inner cities, I think it might have been a richer life experience. I intend to raise both of my sons, one of whom turned 3 today. Happy birthday. I intend to raise them in an urban environment. It's more real. The idea that you can run away from the things in life that are unpleasant, like my dad did when he moved us out to Swellesley, it's unrealistic. So is the advent of the internet, as the tool that it is, even though it brings certain unsavory elements out into the suburbs, is it a net plus? I'd have to say yes. Will in Miami, you're on with Johnny.
Hey, Johnny, how you doing?
Good. What do you think, Will?
Well, I think you're right. The internet has made it a little more dangerous, yeah, to be sure, but I don't think this country or anywhere really has ever been safe. Even in the days of Lewis and Clark, there were always dangers out there lurking in one way or another.
Yeah, I know that. But, you know, you and I, when we were growing up and stuff, it was the dream of our parents to put us in an environment that was sheltered and safe. And theoretically we were, and we would be kept from the kind of gruesome realities of the inner city. Now you open up, it's funny too, because I remember talking to Greg Pallast, of all people, about this, and he said, you open up a police blotter of any small town newspaper in the Midwest, you will see stuff that will blow your mind as an Angeleno. These people are, I mean, they're doing stuff that you can't believe they would do in Nebraska or Wyoming, but they do, you know. And I suspect that a lot of this has to do with the fact that we become a much smaller world with the advent of the internet. Randy in Augusta, Georgia, you're on with Johnny.
Yes. If you remember In Cold Blood, set back in Kansas, I mean, that was one of the most horrible crimes you can imagine, and a totally innocent family. So I don't really believe it's that much worse. I just think we're much more aware of it now, thanks to the news and the internet.
Well, I mean, it has always been a case, especially here in L.A., Randy, that on the news is if it bleeds, it leads. The more gruesome, the better. I remember when I moved here in the late 80s, the internet didn't exist yet here, and yet that's all you would see was one gruesome crime scene after another. And it is true that some of the most brutal crimes in American history have been in rural America, committed by Charlie Starkweather and Ted Bundy and the likes. But that being said, It sort of defeats the entire purpose of having the suburbs being able to run away from this stuff. I got to tell you, I really wish I was back there right now. I wish I was at a town meeting in Wellesley, seeing all these horrified people looking at their million-dollar homes, knowing that their neighbors were running prostitution rings out of them. Oh, that's just, it's just too rich. Vengeance is mine at last. When we return, we will speak of other things. Gwendolyn from Malloy, hang on. Johnny Wendell.
Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs.
That would be me. I'm in for Mike Malloy at 34 past the hour. Sam Cedar will be in for Mike tomorrow. Been a pleasure hanging with you as always. Here's a question for you. What is Godwin's Law? You know what Godwin's Law is? Godwin's Law is a rule in a debate or in an argument or in a dialogue that the first person that invokes Adolf Hitler or Nazis loses. That's what Godwin's law is. If you resort to calling the person that you're debating with a Nazi, or you liken their positions to Nazism, or you liken them to Hitler, or you liken them to the SS, or the Gestapo, or the Luftwaffe, or the Wehrmacht, or whatever, you make Nazi-ish relations in a conversation, Godwin law has been invoked, and you lose. All right. I learned this recently on them internet type tubes type stuff, that that's what Godwin's law is. You can't do it. In other words, because it's been thrown around and bandied about so much and so lightly that it no longer has any effect. Just me calling, like if I were to say, I don't like the music Ian is playing. He's a tunes Nazi, for example. I've cheapened the horrific example of what the National Socialists did in Germany in the 30s and 40s, what they did in Germany, what they did to the rest of the world. That's what Godwin's law is. So you learn something new every single day on the Wendell Show here, or on Mike Malloy's show with Wendell filling in. Well, apparently, the Nazi thing is still considered very, very, very serious, especially in Europe. And there is a story that comes to us today from London about the president of the Fédération Internationale de l'Automobile, the Formula One people, the people that oversee Formula One racing. And a gentleman by the name of Max Mosley is the president of the FIA, and he is suing a tabloid magazine claiming that they have besmirched him. They are suing him over, this is what happened exactly. A few months ago, he was videotaped having an orgy with prostitutes in London, and supposedly as part of this orgy, the prostitutes dressed up like German guards in Nazi regalia, and they paddled his butt, and they whipped him, and they smacked him around, and it was a standard bondage discipline sadomasochism thing, but with Nazi imagery and Nazi themes. Okay, he acknowledges, and I've seen the video, and it's hard to determine if this is exactly true or not. He is dressed in a striped outfit like a prisoner at one point as they're paddling him, and he does acknowledge that he does have or has had sadomasochistic encounters, and he is suing the News of the World. News of the World is sort of like the New York Daily News over in London. They're a tabloid. And he is suing them for invasion of privacy. His lawyer said that the tabloid had breached the privacy of the president of the racing governor's body for the amusement of their readers. Now, according to the lawyer, said every ordinary human being expects the privacy of their sexual life to be respected, would be outraged if they weren't. The newspaper says, no, that's not true. Mosley is a public figure, and as a result, he's interesting, especially being the head of the Formula One group, Fédération Internationale of the Automobile, but also because Mr. Mosley's dad was probably the most famous British fascist and Nazi. As anybody who knows the famous or now famous Elvis Costello song Less Than Zero off of Elvis's first record for Sony back in the 70s, he was talking about Oswald Mosley, Oswald and his tattoos. You'll know the tune. In fact, it's famous because when Elvis went on Saturday Night Live, he started playing Less Than Zero, and he stopped, and he told the American audience, you people wouldn't understand the backstory behind this. I can't play this song. We'll play another one. And they busted into the song Radio, Radio, about the corruption of American radio. It's a very famous moment on late night television. Anyway, Max Mosley, Oswald Mosley's son, has had to deal with this Nazi stuff his whole life, and is suing this tabloid, claiming that it was none of their business what was going on. And in reality, he says, there wasn't even a hint of Nazi role play. He said, I can't think of anything more unerotic than Nazi role play. And his attorney said, this is not a forum, this court, to debate the evils of his dad. The sins of the fathers can't be visited on Mr. Mosley, which is fair in jurisprudence. Of course, in America today, given what our judicial system is like, the sin of whomever can be visited on whomever. You can be sent to Guantanamo without trial at this point. So maybe it's good that this is not happening in the U.S. But as I'm reading this story about Oswald Mosley's kid, the head of the Formula One racing thing and his sex life, it struck me as kind of odd in that I don't think, for one thing, the libel and slander laws in England are not the same as they are here. If you are a public figure in America, it is very, very hard to win a slander or a libel suit. You're a public figure. You're held to a different standard. It's not the same in England. It's the same for everybody. But it makes me wonder about something that is still a very, very touchy issue with people, which is the idea of Nazism, even in a camp and playful sort of way. 63 years ago, Adolf Hitler was either killed by the Russians or killed himself after his girlfriend or his wife, actually, Eva Braun, killed herself. 63 years ago, the Third Reich fell. Germany fell. The Russians and Americans and British got the Wehrmacht to surrender. It was over. World War II ended, or in the European theater, it ended on VE Day in 1945. So it's been 63 years, and this is gone. Nazi imagery is considered to be, in many, many ways, the ultimate taboo, isn't it? But what would be so wrong if that was, in reality, this guy says it isn't, but if it was this guy's turn on, would that be such a bad thing? If these women were dressed up like members of the SS and they do interrogate him in this video and they're paddling him and it's his sexual fantasy, what is so bad about something like that? Do you think that the 63 years that have passed since the fall of the Third Reich have finally given us the opportunity to examine this phenomenon without hysteria? Like I said, Godwin's Law, you bring up Nazis, you bring up Hitler, everybody freaks out. And you lose your argument because they've cheapened the currency. It doesn't have the resonance in arguments as it used to. Do you think that we will ever be able to be cold and clinical about the images of the swastika, of the SS, of the stormtrooper, of the jackboot? Because realistically speaking, role-playing in sex is just that. It's role-playing. If it turns this guy on to be whacked around by a bunch of nice-looking blonde women in a cat house in London dressed up like members of the SS, is it that bad? Are we ever going to have a reasonable opinion of Nazism, or is it always going to be 100% taboo? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480, that is our number here at the Nova M Radio Networks on the Mike Malloy Show. Johnny Wendell sitting in. I'm reading this thing, and I'm thinking to myself, it would have been far more repugnant, isn't it true, if he had made these prostitutes dress up like children, if he was indulging in a fantasy that had to do with pedophilia. I would think, yes, that is a horrible thing. The guy should definitely step down from his job if that's the case. But if it is something in a historical context, like Nazism, or dressing up like a member of the Ku Klux Klan, or like a witch in Salem and being put in the stocks and pillories and getting battered around, it's play. And they wanted to take the guy's job away. He's been, for all intents and purposes that we know, as the president of this organization, he's been exemplary in this job. Why is it that because in his private life he might have a fetish that has to do with something that is somewhat distasteful, extraordinarily distasteful, he can lose his job on something that really wasn't the public's, it was none of their business in the first place. It didn't relate back to the automobile or the racing business in Europe. If the guy had a thing for Nazi women, so what? And yet because of the Nazi thing, it is plastered all over sports channels all over the world, and he's suing them. He's had it. He doesn't like this. And you know something? And I'm Jewish, mind you. I think that he has an absolute right to his privacy, and if he digs women that dress up like Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS, that is his right. That is his prerogative. When are we going to get sane about this stuff? Just because somebody has a fetish for something like this, it doesn't mean that he's going to go out and kill 6 million of my people again, or that he finds Adolf Hitler an acceptable person in history. What is so wrong with this? Or is Nazism always a no-no in all contexts? I knew you were going to bust out Springtime for Hitler, Ian. You're getting predictable in your old age, old son. When we come back, let's talk about this. Is Nazism ever acceptable, even in role-playing? 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Wendell in from Malloy. Play the tune, son.
Germany, Deutschland is happy and gay. We're marching to a faster pace. Look out, here comes the master race. Springtime for Hitler and Germany. Winter for Poland and France. Springtime for Hitler and Germany. Come on, Germans, go into your
Wendelin for Mike Malloy. And my prerogative is that we're going to finish up this show rocking. We've been talking about this lawsuit that is going forward in England by a gentleman named Max Mosley. He is suing the News of the World paper over the idea that he was filmed in the company of a dominatrix and her crew dressed up in Nazi regalia. He wasn't, they were, supposedly, and they were enacting a Nazi fantasy. He claims there was none of that. It's not erotic. He admits that he does enjoy sadomasochism, but he claims Nazism had nothing to do with it. I don't understand why anybody would make a big deal out of somebody role-playing. The thing is that Mr. Mosley has two things going against him. He is a public figure who is the president of the Fédération Internationale of Automobiles that oversees Formula One racing in Europe. And also, he is the son of England's most famous fascist, the legendary Oswald Mosley. Okay? So, essentially, he had a bullseye on his head with this stuff going on. Now, what, to me, I do not understand why people can't let this go and say, if this is his fantasy, if this is his fetish, it should be allowed. The fact that it is Nazism freaks people out. If the guy role plays as a Nazi, then deep down he must want to conquer Europe and exterminate the Jews and the Gypsies and the Catholics, and he reads Mein Kampf all the time. That's nothing like that. If this is his turn-on, this is his turn-on. And yet, everybody seems to think that it's a slippery slope where there's smoke, there's fire. I don't see it that way. And he's suing News of the World because his reputation is apparently in some jeopardy. Are we ever going to be able to have sane conversations on the issues of National Socialism, of Nazism? Or is it always going to provoke hysteria in any context? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Tim in Burbank on K-Talk. You're on with Johnny.
Johnny Wendell, I love you, man. You guys ended the last break with Springtime for Hitler. And
of course.
I was too young at the time when it came out, but I know I remember it coming out a few years ago on stage.
Right.
And it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And everybody seemed to accept it in those terms, even though it was satire. I wonder if that relates to the issue.
Well, it actually does relate to the issue, Tim, because when Mel Brooks wrote The Producers, by the way, the movie was originally called Springtime for Hitler, nobody would touch it. And this guy was one of the most famous writers in Hollywood. He's famous with his partnering with Carl Reiner, the 2000 man. He's one of the hottest people in comedy, Mel Brooks. And he had the script, and people said, you have got to be out of your mind. Nobody would make the movie. And he did make the movie. The Producers, probably the greatest comedy ever made. It is genius. Anybody who thinks that the stage adaptation of it is something, forget it. Go out and rent the movie. I think that Brooks was able to get away with this because he's a Jewish man. Just like I can get away with this being Jewish myself, talking about it, if I was a Gentile, people would say, it's easy for you to naysay the misery that this man caused. He exterminated 6 million Jews. I'm well aware of this. I've heard it my whole life. I was born many years after the Holocaust ended. I'm aware of it. It's not a laughing matter. On the other hand, in the context of sexual role-playing, how could it be considered as anything but dress-up? One of my favorite rock and roll bands of all time, the Stooges, Iggy Pop and the Stooges, those guys wore iron crosses around their necks. They dressed up in jodhpurs. They looked like members of the SS. Does it mean that their music stunk? No. It's some of the greatest rock and roll ever made. If you look at a paperback book anywhere, you will notice that a lot of them have a little swastika on them. Does that mean that it's encrypted for Nazism? No. It's a powerful symbol that draws people's attention. Are we ever going to be able to have a sane view on the symbolism of Nazis? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Ray in Miami, Florida, you're on with Johnny.
Yeah, I think there's a certain bit of hypocrisy, because
yeah,
we see Nazism displayed all the time.
Yeah.
So George Lucas's Star Wars.
Right.
Just change it from black to white. That's glorifying a Nazi empire. Same,
right.
Same thing. It came afterwards with Paul Verhoeven. But
right,
the actual clothes from when you first see it in Triumph of the Will, Leni Riefenstahl, which I believe she also designed the SS uniforms.
That's correct, yes.
They're tailor-made to be fetishized. That's the jack boots, the black uniforms, but we
sure
can say everybody dresses in black.
Yeah, and in shiny black leather and jodhpurs, which are riding gear and riding crops. It's married to the idea of sadomasochism. If that is the case, then how can you fault this guy? I think what it is that people look at him and they go, Mosley, his dad was a Nazi. Oswald Mosley was a personal friend of Adolf Hitler. He's a Nazi, too. Well, I got news for you. Those of you that drive around in Ford automobiles, Henry Ford got birthday cards from Adolf Hitler. Hitler loved Henry Ford. Henry Ford was an anti-Semite. Henry Ford loved Adolf Hitler, too. Does that mean we should stop driving Fords like they're crappy cars? No. We're at 800-989-1480. Mike in Miami, you're on with Johnny.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify something that Godwin's rule has a corollary, and that is that those who shout the loudest about liberty are the first to take it away when they find themselves in a position of power.
Oh, absolutely.
The issue here is that this guy, I understand, previously has been criticized for running his organization in an autocratic way. And so even though his role-playing has him in the victim position, that still means that autocracy is more of an issue for him than for the ordinary person.
Sure, I understand that. Yes, he has ruled the FIA with a rather stern and firm hand, supposedly. And it is always said that, and in fact, if you talk to people that are in this line of work, and I have, because that's what I do, I talk to everybody, dominatrixes will tell you that their best customers are rich, powerful, old white men that want to be dominated. It was a pleasure talking to you today. It was a pleasure listening to you as well. We will meet again. Wendolyn from Malloy, Sam will be in tomorrow. Au revoir.